On this week's show, Usman Shuja, CEO of Bluebee. This is one of the fun things I get to do as the primary host here on the show is when I want to sit down with someone that's making some noise and entering and just have a private conversation, I get to do that. So Usman, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here, Jeff. Thank you for having me.
It is great to have you. I was really impressed with seeing you at the AGC IT Forum this summer. And I really wanted the opportunity to get a chance to sit down. I know you've been running around a lot lately, been out on the scene a lot. So I know we're going to have a lot to talk about.
I look forward to it.
All right. So new to the industry, about a year now with Bluebeam and Nemetschek, correct?
That is correct.
Awesome. So why don't you give people a little bit of a background in the depth? I think the story here is really cool.
So yeah, relatively new to the industry. Look, I developed this passion for technology being applied to the physical world when I was in my teens, when I saw IBM Deep Blue beat Garry Kasparov in a game of chess, and that captured my imagination of how AI was impacting a thing that we do in real world. And I was set at that time in my teens that I wanted to be a computer scientist and I wanted to work for IBM. And I wanted to be a technologist. And after graduating doing computer science, I worked for IBM as I had planned and loved it. After doing a few series of business things with BCG and Dell, I ended up meeting somebody who was doing an artificial intelligence startup. And he had lofty goals of changing the physical world, especially in the oil and gas and manufacturing and aerospace. And I was not too familiar with those industries. But that journey really changed my life. I got to use cutting edge technology to and then applying it to industries that are very traditional. Really enjoyed that, build that into a unicorn. There were a lot of good learnings that I had was taking technology and applying it to traditional industries is not that straightforward. It has its challenges. And it was a very humbling experience in the beginning. But I took that to Honeywell, where I was the chief commercial officer for all of the software business, and then led the largest software business, which was the building software. And that ended up bringing me to Nemetschek and Bluebeam, and was very inspired by the purpose and the mission of Nemetschek. And one of the things that really drew me was the purpose and the heritage that it has with Professor Nemetschek, who pioneered this industry in Germany almost 60 years ago. And he's still so passionate about innovation in the industry. And that's really something that that drew me here. And I see Bluebeam as an opportunity to influence the industry and take the industry forward. So quite excited to be here 1 year and looking forward to seeing how we can contribute to the industry.
Are you trying to reach the innovators and decision makers in construction technology? Then look no further than sponsoring the ConTech crew. That's right, we're taking new advertisers. Email us at advertising@theconTechcrew.com to learn more. It's a great story because we talk a lot about this industry being a different type of industry than maybe some of the others, especially given its risk tolerance, right? There's reasons why construction, oil and gas, aerospace are, you know, grounded in risk mitigation. And really, you know, in some other worlds, we can take a couple risks. Something happens, right? And in our world, though, it can end up disastrous. So I'm wondering, you kind of mentioned some humbling early experiences. What are some of those that have kind of shaped maybe how you've arrived with us here in the construction space?
I vividly remember when I was at Spark Cognition, the AI startup I mentioned. I went to speak to turbine maintenance folks at one of the largest utilities, and we had an AI algorithm we believed could really solve the problem. And the types of questions and the depth the first people who had been working on the turbines for the last 30 years just took us by surprise. And that was just one moment that I remember. It's like, wow, like we can't come into that industry where people have such deep knowledge, where the risk is so high, and ask people to do things differently. For me, that was a really humbling experience. The respect for domain expertise is super important, when especially for folks coming outside of the industry from the software world, from the technology world. The second is you got to also respect the economics and the value chain of an industry, because that drives behavior. And construction is very different from oil and gas, and oil and gas is very different from aerospace. There are similarities, but you got to respect that. And then lastly, the biggest lesson that I walked away with is the attention to change management. You can have the best AI software, best software technology that can solve a problem, but the processes are ingrained by people who have been in the industry for 30, 40, 50 years, and it requires that investment in making sure, communicating why and how their work is going to change because of the software or the technology they're going to use. So the three big lessons for me, respect for domain expertise, bringing them in, respecting the economics and the value chain of the industry, and the change management details that are quite critical to make any technology project successful.
Well, I think that speaks to why I believe you're going to be really successful in what you're doing now, because so many of the software companies I come across are bringing, you know, cutting edge technology to construction. And there's this level of like, well, just trust me. It's like, no, they're not going to do that, not just because they're some sort of Luddite, but really because they do have a depth and a knowledge of what they're doing and how it can impact and what can possibly go wrong. So I love that depth of domain expertise and really understanding where they come from. I never really thought about understanding the different economic chains. I know I've kind of done this, you know, through the Construction Progress Coalition, the what's in it for me. And I make some jokes about, hey, you know, we're all in this to make money. I don't know why it's not cool for us to say that. But really, I joke around about that a little bit. But, you know, what are some of those value change differences, maybe even over the last year that you've been traveling around, that are unique about construction?
Look, I think as you go down the from owners to developers to architects to general contractor to subcontractors, the margin profile starts to look different. And the drivers of each and the level of sophistication they have, the level of risk tolerance they have, access to talent they have, starts to change. The owner of a building or a construction project could be very motivated by things that are very different what a subcontractor would be motivated by. And their margin profiles are very different, and how they make money is very different. Also, how the projects are structured, who is taking more of the risk, and who has the power in the value chain in construction can vary by projects. Some of the risk is passed on to down the value chain, some goes up. So I think understanding that to say, okay, why is somebody motivated to adopt technology is critical. And I'm still 1 year in, and trying to understand the value chain we have is fairly complex, and it keeps moving. But that's kind of the example why construction is very different and difficult.
I've heard this now over and over, and now it's kind of clicking. Like I remember Randy Paulson, he's retired now from Duke Energy, but the first time I kind of spoke out of turn in front of a group with an owner in it, he said, wait, I respect that, but you're completely wrong. Like it's great that you said that, but like $50,000 in overtime to us is nothing, because we, at least for him, we have power stations that have to go on. He's like, and for some of these other members, they have, you know, drug facilities that need to start putting out drugs in the 5 years they have before generics can come out. Like, he's like, there's a level of economics beyond you that you need to understand. And so it's kind of clicking that those things don't always line up. But as providers of technology and solutions, we have to understand kind of where each one is in that process. And lastly, change management. That is an underserved skill set and understanding and focus for the industry. I just came back from SMACNA, the Sheet Metal and Air Conditioning Contractors Association's annual convention. And so much of it was focused on not what, but how do we change? How do we implement? And how does that impact us? And so any tips for folks listening that you've kind of picked up over the last year on change management?
Look, I think some of the sophisticated construction companies are taking this into account, and they're doing a very good job. But I think for an individual understanding, and even when it applies to me when I'm starting to use AI tools for my own productivity, I think understanding how my work is going to change and having that line of sight, how that's going to change and what skills do I need to develop or give up. And I think it's a job of the organization to be able to communicate to its employees and workers to say, okay, this tool or capability is going to impact your work in a certain way. And this is how it's going to make your life better, easier, and productive. But you will have to gain some other skills, or you might have to do other things. Giving that level of clarity will lower the anxiety for folks, and they will be more open to adopting. There's such a big shortage of labor in construction. It's not about taking away jobs or anything. It's about improving productivity. But in productivity comes with the type of work you do, or the task you do will change, right? So otherwise, it's no value. So, but giving people that clarity, so communicating, training them, hand-holding them initially, and investing in that training upfront. I think the time to train people is very limited in construction because there's such a big shortage. But I encourage people to do that because in the long run, it pays off significantly.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think it's kind of like medicine, right? An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And it's true. You can really, that little bit of time up front, the crawl, walk, run, teaching folks what's going on, but also understanding that they got 20, 30 years in building, that they might not have that long in technology so far. So it might seem intrusive. It might seem scary. You might even feel a little bit of anxiety. So training up front gets through that, and having people on your team in a process that really shows, hey, this has not only been successful here, but it's been successful other places. And here's the value that it's driven. And that's going to be the value for you, that it really does have a really positive outcome. So I like to see you focused on it. Now, let's dive in a little bit. You just finished this tour with Bluebeam Live, went to some really cool places. I got to watch and see some really cool pictures, cool customers, my friends at the Construction Brothers out there with you. What are some of your big takeaways from that traveling around and especially at Bluebeam and what you're doing right now?
So we just wrapped up Bluebeam Live, which is like a rock star tour to six major cities in the world. I think the biggest thing for me personally, this was the first time I was doing a major event or customer event for Bluebeam, and the passion of the user base and the permission that that the users have given us and the trust that they put us in was very surreal. It showed to me how passionate the user base is, and now the onus is on us to continue to deliver and to take the industry forward. So that was the biggest one takeaway for me, was how much the industry and the users love us, and that's one thing. And we have shared our future plans with them, and there was a lot of positive feedback and also some constructive feedback. So we look forward to taking that and bringing that into 2025 and beyond.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, I mean, honestly and selfishly a little bit here, like my first technology in the industry that really got me going and got my juices flowing was Bluebeam. And I, you know, I saw a lot with it back then, used it a lot, used it for workflows, used it for markups, you know, really, and then got involved with the sort of the zealots of your user base that are some of still my best friends in the industry, some of the biggest change agents in the industry. So what kind of things can we look for in 2025? Is there anything you can spill early? You know, we like to be on the cutting edge.
Yeah, no, I'll give you some teasers. How about that?
I like them.
Look, as you said, right, Bluebeam was so instrumental in taking the industry in the U.S. from paper to digital. And then before and right around COVID, the whole collaboration piece just took off because there was a dire need for it. And I think that the industry is ready for the next step change. And that's what we are working on. We're calling the next phase to be collaboration elevated. Is we are going to take collaboration to the next level. And that's bridging the gap between 2D and 3D and simplifying the experience of collaboration between all the parties. So that's one. But there are a few things that we are working on tactically for next year. And I call them five I's. So I, interoperability and integration. So industry uses multiple software to solve workflows and challenges. It's not one software, it's not Bluebeam, it's not one, it's a combination of those. And our philosophy has always been to work with other vendors and software, but we are opening up our APIs to be part of that workflow. So we are a big component of interoperability. Second is interlinking field worker and office worker. Bluebeam is used significantly in the office and in the trailer. On the job site is where all the action happens. We want to add features and capabilities and bridge that gap. And our recent acquisition of GoCanvas is a step in that direction, but there's a lot more to do, including geospatial and other stuff. The third is intelligent drawings and collaboration. So we're making drawings intelligent using artificial intelligence capabilities to be able to work in 3D environments. Fourth I is inspiring the next generation of Bluebeam fans. And I call them fans because I think of our users as fans. And that includes the experience of collaboration, which is more consumer-like. We want to have license management that is user easy and easy and simple to use. We want to have that really good experience and inspire the next generation of fans. And the last is internationalization. Bluebeam has been pretty much an industry standard in the U.S. We have a pretty big presence in Europe, but there is a lot more to do in Europe and India and the Middle East. So that's another theme that we're going after. So there's a lot more depth to it. And as we start rolling out, we'll share more. But those are the five I's that I call. And you'll hear more a lot about it in the coming days.
I like that because, again, you've spent a year doing what most, you know, CEOs that come into a company with especially as many fans, as deep-rooted integration into the industry that you have and use, and you've done a good job of, I don't want to, this is, it might sound bad, but of not making noise for a while and thinking through and meeting. And, you know, like I said, I was very surprised to meet you when I did and realize you'd been there for that long. And I think the five I's speak to a lot of what we want to see as the next generation of Bluebeam. But also you brought that in, right? You have GoCanvas now, you know, Nemetschek has its own set of tools. So you have sort of a global view too, which is a unique position for a company that got its start here in North America, got its start at the ground floor of construction with a lot of places to go. So it's an opportune moment, I think.
It is, you're spot on, Jeff. I think the timing and the setup is pretty ripe. Nemetschek gives us a very strong portfolio to play with. It's the philosophy that they have, the presence they have globally, and then the trust and the roots we have in the U.S. with Bluebeam, and then just also the timing of the openness in the industry about technology is and the momentum that artificial intelligence and generative AI has. It's a perfect storm for us, and I think we are in a very good setup to make a difference in the industry.
I agree. I think you are. And I want to use that as a segue point because, you know, in your background, you talked about a lot of things, but you did not, I would say, give yourself enough credit for your actual experience with AI. You've referenced it a bit, but you have quite a bit of experience and some things I think we need in our industry, which is thoughtful leadership around how we implement AI. So I'd like to give you a little bit of time, and I'd like to talk a little bit about this, you know, AI. It's somewhat of a new fad is what you hear, but it's really not. It's been around a long time. It's seen its, you know, sort of its accelerant and hype cycle moment for certain types of it. But I'd like to get, you know, can you give me a little bit of your sort of definition where AI was, where we are today? And I want to talk about some of the things you're concerned with as well, that I think I share those concerns.
Yeah, as you said, right, artificial intelligence has been around for a long time, and to be specific, almost 70 years. And every time there's a hype, there is always disappointments, and it has always, the expectations have always exceeded the actual results. But this is the first time, this is the fourth resurgence of artificial intelligence with generative AI. And this time around, the promise of AI is starting to match the technology. And that's what's really exciting. Even 10 years ago when I was doing the deep learning-based startup, the gap between the vision of artificial general intelligence and the reality was significant. And now you can at least see that there's a line of sight that we can have very smart, maybe not AGI, but very smart systems. There is a line of sight to that, and that's exciting and scary, right? At the same time, I always try to look at the bright side of things and really excited about the potential and the impact it can have, the economic impact and the social impact it can have. That actually, when I spent about 10 years in AI over the last decade, that also drove me to study the ethics of AI. So I actually took a break for 1 year and studied policy making for ethical AI and sustainability, and came out of that program with a lot of conviction that we have to be proactive in shaping the foundation of it. With social media, the governments and the governing bodies left that deliberately unregulated. And we can see the impact of that. It has a lot of positives, the technology, but also a lot of the negatives. With artificial intelligence, the impact is way more bigger. So we have to be a lot more careful. And that's why we are leading, Nemetschek is leading with this ethical and human-centric artificial intelligence, something that we really advocate and promote, which includes things like making sure we are transparent about our policies, the type of data we are using, using it fairly, and there are a lot of other things that go with it. But I'm a big advocate that we have to, as an industry of technologists and construction, have to come together along with the government agencies and industry experts to make sure that we do this in a responsible way.
Back in 2020, I heard about a new software platform called Join. Within minutes of seeing Join, I knew it had the power to revolutionize collaborative project delivery. In fact, I was so sold on Join that I joined the team as its industry evangelist. Many trade shows and podcasts later, Join is now used by 50% of the ENR top 30. Why? Pre-con and ops leaders at DPR, Bolt, McCarthy, Barton Mallow, Clark, and others say that they like Join because it does two big things: collaborative, trackable decision-making, and awesomely simple visuals. Want to learn more about the power of Join? Go to www.join.build/demo to learn about how better gets built. I really appreciate the approach. I think we have a very similar approach. I think yours is far more educated than mine is. So I'm at the tip of learning this one, but I'm very familiar with, you know, the social media disaster, I will call it. I mean, yes, it had a lot of positive impacts and it's done some very unique things for us, but it's also left us with, you know, statistically proven higher anxiety levels. 2015, a lot of things changed in the psychological world across the world in general. Yeah. So, and we can tie it back to not leaning in and playing a role in shaping how it comes. So what might be some real world examples of where AI, if we don't be ethical and have a human-centric approach, where could it go off the rails? How could this become the worst case? And then I want to bring it back to the, you know, to the best.
A couple of things that come to mind. One is the data privacy and the transparency of the data used. Going back to your example of social media regulation gave all the technology providers that immunity. So they were like, I have nothing to do with any outcome. I have no liability. And if you do something like that with AI, it can really impact in a couple of things. One is architects and contractors and others have IP that they have put into their designs, into their workflows and their projects. And if software vendors can take that information from different sources and start building algorithms based on that, they can be taking away some of the IP that has been built over the last decades and centuries, right? And can erode the competitive advantage that you have. There's also the privacy piece of it. There's an element of whose data is being used. And that's why I encourage my customers to work with vendors that are signing up for that trustworthy and ethical AI, and also reading between the lines of what their policy towards AI and data is. So that's one example. The second is, just like in autonomous cars, right? The biggest challenge is if a car makes a decision, who is responsible for it? And what was the reason for making that decision? And similarly, as we move towards more autonomy and automation on the construction and job sites, there will be a time where a lot of the actions will be automated. And if an accident happens, God forbid, then what was the reason that the machine took a certain decision? And who is eventually liable? Is it the end user who was operating the machine? Is it the algorithm? The software provider, hardware provider, insurance company, or the construction site? Who is responsible for that type of decision and the transparency in how that decision was made? If the vendors and software providers are not open to sharing that kind of information, it can lead to a lot of anxiety, but also lawsuits and things like that. So again, I think these problems, the legal system will solve some of these in other industries, such as autonomous cars and other places. But those are a couple of examples that come to mind where we... if you don't have a good ethical framework, then it can create more problems than advantages.
I like it. And you know, you said this really clearly at AGC IT Forum, and I think Jonathan and Marsh and I were both, you know, it gave us just this nugget that we could go with. At any point when a human is taken out of the decision, that's a scary moment. And that's a moment in which we need to really think through and have lots and lots of discussion, but also openness about that. And in fact, I think you said it, we should let the human make that decision still until, you know, we've done it so many times. I think when you talk about autonomous cars, you know, we're at this point now too, where so many times when we first got in those autonomous cars, there was people and there was a lot of times they were taking over. And I think we kind of laughed it off a little bit at the time, but actually the algorithms were learning. right? Yep. The LiDAR, everything was learning. It was learning all the inputs and learning why a human took over there, why a human did that, to the point where, you know, it got uber trained to do that. So I think we have to be very, very careful as we build those things into our workflows and into our processes and, like you said, into our equipment.
Ethical dilemma that's going to come to us at as a society and as a civilization is when we have to make a call. Look, accidents happen with humans as well, right? And with autonomous cars will also happen, but they will be fewer. I think we're comfortable with human error as a society. We're not going to be that forgiving to be forever, right? So that's a decision we have to say, okay, humans kill, I don't know how many thousands of people on road accidents. Autonomous cars will kill fewer, but it will still do it. So that's a pretty big ethical dilemma. And who will hurt in the process is also something we have to make a decision as a society, which is a tough, tough problem.
Yeah, we're really good at understanding that humans make mistakes, but yeah. we do not look at computers the same way, nor software, nor things like autonomous vehicles. And so you're right, it brings in a whole nother thought process. So I think we go down the rabbit hole for a while on this one, but I want to know, where do you see it actually driving, you know, advantages? Because I think that is the upside, and I'm coming over more and more to the upside. I like to be slow in that process, a little bit more thoughtful. So where do you see it? And maybe, you know, kind of maybe give me a nugget or two about Bluebeam or Go Canvas or Nemetschek or something on how you guys see it being applied.
I think there's way more upside than downside, and we need to focus on the upside. Bluebeam has a philosophy of taking a simple approach to innovation. And what Bluebeam has been really good at solving simple problems for the users that add up to really big productivity and improving their experience. And my philosophy is AI is a tool, is an avenue to still solving customers' problems. The reason why Bluebeam exists is to empower the users in the construction world. And we should continue to think about making their lives better. And if AI solves that, that's great. If there are other ways to do it, then we should do that. So we take that approach and then tie back to say, okay, what's the best technology? And so we are looking at those simple incremental things that can make a big difference. So that's one thread that we are working on. And that's my guidance to any AI provider is to, how can we apply the technology to solve those mundane things, day-to-day things that are painful to do or make you feel unproductive? So that's one. And the second is then AI will also give us capabilities to think big and think differently. And some of the things that AI can do for the construction world is can automate a lot of the workflows we are doing, some of the creative parts of it too. So we can focus on more bigger and more important things. For example, search. We have tons and tons of documents, and being in proactively search and guide architects and designers and workers with what to do next and minimize some of their questioning, and especially for the younger and less experienced workers is another area that I feel. And lastly, it's automation, which would be a combination of hardware and software. But as the software gets more sophisticated, the automation in the value chain and as well as on the job site are some very big opportunities to go. But the last thing, the underlying thing is that I don't know the answer to, but we have to be open to that happening is, will AI create opportunities that will disrupt the business models? And that, I don't know the answer whether, but I think it might happen. It will, the way we deliver projects, the way we, the margin pools might start to move differently. I don't know the answer how that's going to move, but I think we, as the industry adopts technology and looks at some of the constraints, we should be able to find some opportunities to creatively disrupt the market.
I think you're spot on. And something I've been talking about to folks as well about this is it's a great time because I think it is a, you know, generative AI and some of the things we're talking about are at their peak of inflated expectations. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't act now on certain things, which is like getting your data in order, getting things into systems like a Bluebeam, like a Go Canvas, something structured, something that prepares you to have the raw materials depending on where it goes. But then also leaning into what you're talking about, if our leaders in the industry, at the companies, at our unions, at our industry organizations are leaning in and learning, but also guiding, then I believe the industry has an opportunity to go through a transformation. And yeah, those margins will shift and things will shift, but in ways that we can predict and get our workforce ready for and have a really good change management experience. Disruption is if we kind of bury our heads in the sand and think it's not going to impact us, then yes, those of you that are doing it, wherever you are in the business, you're going to be disrupted. And I think that's the difference, is being awake to the change right now and an unusual opportunity for all of our tools, no matter where they are, to leverage some version of it. I, you know, in some respects, I'm tired of the, oh, I've got AI in my thing right now. However, and I think that'll go away over time. It'll just be, you know, table stakes.
Yeah.
But it is good to know that no matter where you are in the chain, you should be using it, looking at it and thinking about it, but then turning around and leaning into how do we make something that works right? And, you know, we do have, you know, a labor shortage. We've seen all the statistics that are out there. We're headed for a cliff. So it really isn't about replacing people in general, but there is an upskilling, right? We are going to need to understand. And this next generation coming in, you know, they might be operating equipment with PlayStation type controllers, Xbox. I don't want to pick one or the other, you know, but they're operating them with that, but that's okay. You know, that's no different than how many of the controls over time have changed. So I'm with you. I think it's just a great time for that, but it's also about leaning in. So listen, it's been great to sit down with you. I'm really excited that I got the opportunity. I know you got a really busy schedule. I encourage everyone to connect with Usman. He's been a fantastic connection for me. And yeah, any final words for everybody listening in?
Thank you for having me on this show. Great reach with this program. So what I wanted to part with a couple of thoughts. One is I think the timing is ripe for the industry to transform itself, to be more technically savvy. I'm meeting so many people who are so technology forward within the industry, and it gives me a lot of pleasure and optimism around it. The second is Bluebeam has a very strong roadmap plan for 2025. So stay tuned. And we, as I mentioned in the podcast, we exist to empower our users, and we're coming with a very strong story based on your feedback. So stay tuned to learn more.
That's awesome. You guys can check them out. They'll be in the show notes for you. Thank you for tuning in today to geek out for our interview with Usman Shuja. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to the show, visit thecontechcrew.com. This is the Contech Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.